Whether you like the news of 2017 or not, it's nearly over. There certainly were a lot of big news stories in the past year, and we're just talking about Alaska. What was important? What changed your life? What made you smile or what got you upset in the past year? What was just plain interesting? Join us today for Talk of Alaska as we review the news of 2017 and look at what's in store for 2018.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Larry Persley. Joining me today are two guests, longtime Alaska journalists. We have Michael Carey in the studio with us and Lisa Diemer, who's a senior reporter at the Anchorage Daily News. We're going to talk about top news stories of 2017, how it's going to affect 2018. So I guess since I'm sitting in this chair, I'll start. And to me, the biggest story in 2018, or I shouldn't say the biggest, one of the biggest stories was the congressional vote to open ANWR, something Alaskans have been talking about, dreaming about, lusting over for years, and something that could have long-term effect on Alaska, the economy, oil and gas production. But also what struck me on a more personal level was how many Alaskans are willing to overlook anything the Trump administration does if we can get ANWR. So with that, I guess I'd like to ask Michael your brief thought on that or your story of the year, and then we can go to Lisa. But also, people, it's a call-in program. The call-in number is 1-800-478-8255. From Anchorage, 550-8422. Michael.
The ANWR story is a remarkable story because lusting probably is the right word. Alaskans have wanted this, or many of them, for decades now. It is interesting, however, that there are people who, not just in the environmental community, who vigorously oppose this. Some of you may have seen an op-ed piece by Robert Thompson of Kaktovik representing the Kaktovik people. So this is, for Alaska politicians, it's a win. On the other hand, they know that there are some people who are unhappy with them, and nobody really knows how it'll turn out, but this is the big opening step for opening ANWR, and then we'll just see. We'll finally get to see what's in the box under the ground.
Okay, Lisa?
One quick thought on ANWR, and that's just what there's a lot of steps till anything is actually produced, and starting with the big unknown are which oil companies are going to want to develop there. It's very expensive to develop in the far north. There was a lot of excitement among that sector when Shell was going to develop in the Arctic, and then they pulled out. And so this isn't offshore, so not as expensive in some ways as that, but still there's risk. There's big costs.
So maybe a little bit of premature celebration on the part of Alaskans?
Well, it's just a long ways till any oil is produced and more oil comes into the pipeline, which is what they always talk about.
Right.
Yeah, just adding to what Lisa said, and she said it very well, one of the keys here is going to be developing this oil at what price. The big companies who, for the most part, are going to be involved here, for certainly an example like Exxon, are going to be trying to figure out what the price of oil is going to be in 2027 or some year quite out there. They have specialists who do this, but this is not exactly a sure thing for them either.
No, but it does seem to be the most visible reward
right,
for Alaska
right,
from the
right.
Trump administration after
That's correct.
Almost a year.
That's correct.
Okay. Say, moving away from ANWR, Michael, what would you pick as a top story of the year?
Well, nationally, many publications and individuals have picked the sexual misconduct, sexual harassment story as the story of the year, and I certainly think it deserves it. This is a revolution in experience and in consciousness and in office behavior. Here in Alaska, many of us who'd been around the Alaska legislature thought there would be someone who would be become the center of attention on sexual misconduct charges, and it was Representative Westlake. Dean Westlake, and his pattern followed what we've seen all over the United States. Charges brought by women who claimed that they in some way had been mistreated, his denial that he'd mistreated anybody, his assertion that if he'd mistreated anybody, he didn't mean to do it on purpose, his assertion that he was not going anywhere, he was staying, and his resignation.
Right. There was a progression there. You and I had talked about this before the program. When parties now are going to be looking for candidates, this will become part of the standard vetting. Have you had any bankruptcies, any criminal charges, and anything we should know about past sexual encounters, abuse, assaults, allegations?
Absolutely. That is the case. What the other thing I just want to add here and is in the Harvey Weinstein example was so outrageous and so egregious, and much of what he did was criminal behavior. But then there was the revelation fairly recently, I think it was in the LA Times, that he used a particular hotel in Los Angeles to lure young women to his room and took advantage of them. And there were also cases where guests at the hotel took advantage of the staff there, the people who did the rooms. And it occurred to me this is was also very much the class system at work, because you can imagine what would happen if any staff person, if somebody in the cleanup department or housekeeping physically assaulted some guests, that person would be fired or go to jail. It doesn't work that way if you got a lot of money.
It doesn't. Now, I got to ask, I never heard this report. Was it a Trump International Hotel?
No, it wasn't.
I had to ask. Lisa, anything you'd like to add to those or a topic of your own picking?
I'll add something to my own topic in just a moment, but on the sexual harassment and sexual assault cases, I mean, this really does mark a change in our world. Whether it's lasting, we don't know. I don't know if you all read the New York Times story recently on the Ford plants around Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
And the lawsuits settled 20 years ago there for this environment of extreme sexual harassment, really assaults as well. There was never an apology or an acknowledgement, but money was paid. Monitors were hired. Classes were held to educate so that people would no longer behave that way. And yet now it's all happening again at those same plants. And so while there's this sense is that our world, or at least our country, is changing and how women should be viewed and treated, there's a lot of unknowns on how behavior will really change. That whole Me Too movement, hashtag Me Too, that so many women have responded to, just watching my own Facebook feeds, you realize, gosh, pretty much everyone I know.
Right, and unfortunately, we're learning it was pervasive and we haven't solved it yet. You mentioned before we take some calls that there was another new story you wanted to add to the list.
Yeah, when I was thinking about coming on this program, I thought, well, what do people want to talk about? And I have a couple in mind. And the first one on my list is just crime, because that's been so big in statewide and in Anchorage. We're at a record number of homicides this year. One from Anchorage is even being prosecuted out of Palmer because the Anchorage DA's office is so overloaded with all these homicides. So it's just something that those don't necessarily affect our lives. Those aren't usually strangers this year. I don't know that, not very many were, but there's lots of other crime that does affect lots of us, including vehicle theft.
Well, plus you mentioned crime in Anchorage. It's a mayoral election year coming up in 2018. So when we think about what's going to affect the news in 2018, I would expect the incumbent and any challengers, crime or safety, reducing crime will become the big issue of the mayoral campaign in Anchorage.
It certainly will be. It'll be a huge issue.
Okay. Let's take a call. Before we do that, just to remind people, call-in number is 800-478-8255 from Anchorage. It's 550-8422. Let's take a caller here, Bill from Anchorage.
Yeah, hey, Larry, thanks for coming in. Good to hear your voice, and you too, Mike. I called in to Bob Brinker's Money Talk, and I talked to an oil expert by the name of Charlie, and I cannot remember his last name at the moment. just woke up, forgive me. But anyway, I asked him about Anwar and how it figured into the development worldwide scheme. He goes, it doesn't. There's so much cheaper oil to get in other places that Anwar, being as expensive as it was, it probably wasn't worth developing, was his opinion. So I don't know.
Well, so, Bill, you're kind of going along with what Lisa said before, that there's a lot of steps before we get any oil out of Anwar, and maybe Alaskans were a little bit celebrated Christmas a little bit early with the Anwar vote.
And did we not just find more oil in the NPR? I mean, they said that the technology that they have now to read what's in there, they found more. I mean, so I don't know how hard that would be to develop as opposed to, you know, Anwar. But
well, it's going to be easier. It's going to be closer. So.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Thank you, Larry. And
well, thanks.
Merry Christmas. I mean, Happy New Year to everybody.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We've got another caller, Matt from Sitka.
Yeah, hi. So many issues. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Watching the chickadees feed in my window here in Sitka. What? I haven't heard anybody discuss this. In the tax bill that just passed, there's fallout if the deficit goes over a certain amount. There's triggers, and I don't know if it's in the bill, but the results, and it could affect Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. But one of the things that it could affect, and I've read this somewhere just as a blip, that if we go beyond a certain point on the trigger on the deficit, that the states that have federal oil land, their share of the oil revenue will go from whatever to zero. And, oh. And you know, I find it odd that there's this great silence about this in the Alaska media. I mean, that's pretty darn important. Alaskans pretty much supported that, you know, the Anwar decision because, you know, we have such an economic problem here in Alaska. But if our funding on our share of that oil revenue, if it ever happens, goes to zero because of deficits, what the heck? Can you guys talk about
well,
that?
Well, Matt, you're right. There are some triggers in federal law that talk about a deficit and some automatic cutbacks in spending. But I think the bigger point, as you said, is, and as Lisa's pointed out, any oil revenue from Anwar is years, a decade, 15 years. It's a long time away. By then, I would like to think maybe Congress will get its act together and deal with a deficit. But for the short term, there are other federal programs that could be affected by that deficit trigger. So you're right for raising
that. Larry,
Mike,
what's the split now?
50-50 on Anwar. The state would get half of the federal royalties collected on Anwar, but the state also gets 100% of its production tax
right.
for anything produced on Anwar. But I think you're probably looking at 2030s before you get any oil out of Anwar. So hopefully by then, maybe by then Congress will have become responsible and dealt with the deficit, but we'll see. So thanks for raising that, Matt.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Michael, what do you see as another big news story the past year?
Let's go back to what Lisa was saying about crime, and I'll throw a few things out
sure.
there, and maybe you two guys could pick it up, because that really is so important, and how much it has dominated news coverage here, especially in the second half of the year. And you get up the day after Christmas and find that the police departments in two different places, police officers in two different places, one in Fairbanks, one in Soldotna, were involved in shooting members of the public who, for some reason, got out of control. And we've seen not only a record here in Anchorage, I believe, of homicides, but we've seen a number of these police shootings. And there's going to be a lot of discussion about this. And you know, you have to wonder, the police thinking, you know, when I stop a car or pick up a guy on the road, what are the chances of this person being armed? And it seems like they are much greater than when yours truly was a boy walking down the streets in Fairbanks.
The one you just mentioned in Soldotna over just a few days ago, this was an individual who I think was reported as a suspicious man, and troopers get there and it's cold, and so I guess he doesn't seem too much trouble. So they're basically offering him a ride, is what troopers said happened, and he gets in the trooper vehicle and has a handgun, and things just escalate from there. He doesn't, from what troopers said, you know, we have to go on their reports of these things, and that, you know, he wouldn't put down the gun. And that's not going to end well if you have a gun around officers and do not put it down.
Larry, can I ask her, Lisa, a question here?
Sure.
Yeah. Lisa, the police chief, political leaders, many people will say, especially here in Anchorage, well, it's a small number of people who are involved in these violent crimes. They tend to know each other. The people who are stealing mail, stealing cars, it's a small number of people committing these crimes over and over again, and their accessories and friends and neighbors. What do you make of that?
There's probably truth to that. So I came to Alaska in 1994, and at that time, there were these gang wars. And I'm not sure if gang is the correct term, because there's probably all kind of definition to that. But that's what it seemed like going on in some of the streets of Anchorage. And some of them killed one another, and some number of them ended up in prison. And things did calm down a lot. Before last year, 2016, which was the record until this year broke the record had been 1995. And so homicides in a place as small in population as we are, a few can really change our perception of our place and also just really increase the numbers in a huge way. So homicides, they go up and down very quickly. I mentioned vehicle thefts just because that's something that has affected a lot of people. The numbers are incredible. I wasn't able to get the most current numbers for this program this morning, but earlier in the year, we had already broken the record for 2016, and that was, I think, in late summer, where there were 2,400 vehicles stolen in this town. 2,400 vehicles stolen. Now, the police chief, Justin Dahl, and the mayor, Ethan Berkowitz, were just in at the paper the other day talking about crime. And one thing the chief said, and this might be news you can use, was that, surprisingly, he said half of the vehicle thefts, the car is running, the doors are unlocked. So that's a simple way to avoid having your vehicle stolen.
Or at least reduce your chances.
Yeah, at least reduce. Correct. And actually, I've changed my own behavior hearing that. And also, I had forgotten this. Apparently, it is also, there's some obscure offense to leaving your vehicle running and not being in it. So that's another reason not to do that.
Okay. We have an email from Kathleen in Haines on the issue of ANWR, and she makes the point, the irony of Alaska dealing with the impacts of climate change, burning fossil fuels, and Kathleen says, hey, you know, ignoring those voices, that there are a lot of Alaskans who are opposed to fossil fuel burning and developing more. Lisa, you have spent most of the past few years out in Bethel, right?
Right, yep, in Western Alaska.
So the irony of fossil fuel development, more oil and gas, ANWR opening up more federal acreage. What's the reaction in rural Alaska to that? Where those residents see the impacts of climate change more than those of us in Midtown Anchorage?
I didn't do any, man on the street, woman on the street interviews about that. Just from my life out there, people are just so busy with life and struggling through life that I don't know that that's as much a top of the mind as it is in other places and as much of a conversation.
People have more immediate needs to deal with.
That they're focusing on, yes. It's more of survival and getting through and getting the food that you need in your freezer.
Here's something to follow up on that. We're celebrating the opening of ANWR. The legislation is passed, signed, and so forth through the tax bill. Yet we're still going to hear from people in Fairbanks in particular and Bush, Alaska, saying, okay, that's all great. When is my fuel bill going to get lower? And the answer is probably not in the near future. And we've had this run of lower oil prices, which has really helped out Fairbanks. People who home heat with oil, as my family did. But there were a lot of people who went to wood. There's been an experiment with natural gas up there. The number of people are on natural gas. It's not anywhere near, you know, dominant in the town. But there's still going to be people who are going to say, this is all great. What are you going to do about my heating bill? And I don't think Congress has a particularly good answer for that.
No, they don't. That gets to Lisa's point is we can talk about the big news stories of the year, what's coming in 2018, but most people want to know what's going to affect my life yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Let's take a before we go to a call, we've got Paul from Sitka, but let me remind people, if you want to call in, ask questions, or just tell us what you think the big story was in your community, it's 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, 550-8422, or email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Paul from Sitka, you want to talk about the Affordable Health Care Act?
Oh, yes, it seems like one of the big stories this year, at least on our end, was that constituents wrote and called Lisa Murkowski and encouraged or changed their mind to keep Obamacare as the law of the land. And I thought that was a pretty big deal, and it kind of showed kind of what you can do in Congress.
Right. There was a lot of pressure on Senator Murkowski on those initial votes to keep the Affordable Care Act. But then as part of the tax bill, we saw the provision that if you don't get insurance, you've got to pay a penalty. That was repealed. But that
repeal doesn't take place till this next year.
Right.
It'll be in place. It's
right.
The year
exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Paul. Let me ask Lisa, other stories on your list?
Well, here's one that not all of you may have heard about that much, but out in Bethel, it was a big story this summer, really big. And it was when a gray whale swam up the Kuskokwim River. It first was watched and then hunted, and it took a while for them to kill it, but they did out of boats. They didn't have the proper equipment. This isn't a whale hunting region. They don't have authority approvals to hunt large whales like that. And so the whole thing ended up being pretty controversial, but it was a really dramatic and emotional event for many people on a lot of levels. And it too comes down to food, because that's one of the reasons the people did go after this whale. They saw it as food, and it turned out to be food. First it sank, but they were able to, with a lot of work and engineering, various big hooks and equipment, because they didn't have the proper equipment, they were able to get the whale from the bottom of the river, and the meat was still good. They butchered it and distributed it.
So you mentioned it's not like the North Slope communities where they had an authorized number of whales they were allowed to hunt. Were there any repercussions, any action by authorities?
Nothing yet, and there may not be. Out also in western Alaska, out of Tuxik Bay, a humpback whale was hunted and killed. I believe that was in 2016. It might have been 15. I think it was 2015 at any rate. And they ended up just getting a letter of reprimand, basically telling, hey, this is the law. While this is probably illegal, you did harvest it, you did eat it, you may not have known it was the law, or it might not have been on top of the mind when the boats went out and targeted the whale.
I'm sure they took the letter of reprimand seriously.
Well, probably
you
they did.
Yeah.
They probably did.
Right. We've got Christine on the phone from Healy. Christine, you want to make a point about Anwar?
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I had originally called after the moderator started out the show by mentioning that Alaskans were celebrating, and I just wanted to call in to moderate that point by mentioning how many of us have been working for a long time to prevent the opening of Anwar and who remain really opposed to it. I was glad to hear that other commenters and callers have made that point, so I won't dwell on that further. The other point I wanted to make with the Anwar deal was just related to the budget bill and how one of the problems that some of us are having with the Arctic wildlife issue and also the healthcare provisions was just how non-transparent it seems to pack such big and loaded issues that have a lot of repercussions for a lot of different people into a financial tax bill. Just strikes me as kind of the opposite of the way representative democracy is supposed to happen, especially considering that Lisa Murkowski was respondent to a lot of the pressure she received from constituents to not fold on the repeal of some of the provisions in Obamacare, but then she found a way to do it once it was cloaked under a larger bill, and that gave her cover to say, well, I wanted this, and so I accepted that. And I think that brokenness of representative democracy is a big issue for a lot of us in Alaska and across the country. That's all for me. I'll listen from
Thank
here.
You.
Thanks for taking my call.
And I agree with you. The process of putting together that tax bill is pretty offensive as you look at it, and I did not mean to imply that all Alaskans are celebrating over Anwar, but certainly, whether we like it or not, a lot of Alaskans, the congressional delegation, the governor, most of the legislature are celebrating. Speaking of Alaska politics, let me throw something out for Michael and Lisa. One of the, I guess, evolving big stories to me has been my sense that there is a growing acceptance among Alaskans that we're going to be spending part of the permanent fund earnings to pay for public services. There are certainly, Michael and I were talking earlier, candidates for governor in 2018 will campaign on saving the dividend. But, and I guess this is a question for Michael, then for Lisa, I sense a majority of Alaskans acknowledge, grudgingly accept, that any fiscal solution is going to include a part of permanent fund earnings. And this is a fundamental change in Alaska.
It seems that that is the case, Larry, but there are people who are strenuously opposed to this. You remember that Senator Wilikowski went to court, eventually wound up in the Supreme Court trying to get the full amount of the dividend restored. And there are politicians who are going to, who definitely will campaign and have campaigned on the full and permanent dividend. And the candidates who use that word that sort of makes me a little crazy or crazier than I am, enshrined. We must enshrine the dividend in the Constitution. There is still a market for that point of view, but there is also a belief, I think it's pretty clear here, okay, if what are we going to do about our schools? What are we going to do about people in need? What are we going to do about our highways if we enshrine the dividend and guarantee that the dividend is $2,000 every year or whatever number it is, and if it's not reduced. And politicians certainly understand that. They're just trying to figure out which way their constituents want them to go.
Right, and the attraction of a short-term political gain. Lisa?
Governor Walker's budget for the coming fiscal year is based on using permanent fund earnings to balance the budget. The state's main savings account won't have enough in it to cover what they say needs to be spent. Some in the state Senate have wanted to cut the way out of this problem, but that doesn't seem possible without much bigger cuts that have already happened. And the state says it's already kind of cut to the bone. So this is a pretty big change where the governor's proposing to use permanent fund earnings to balance the budget. And it would be the first time that that's been done, I believe.
Certainly in rural Alaska, the dividend is important. It's essential.
It's relied on. It's the cash that they have. It's the money. And often people take it and go and do buy their heating oil with it. So it, or put it down towards a snow machine or whatever else. It's the money they use.
So we're going to go to a break. But when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about the fact that the dividend does appear to be locked in, $1,100, $1,200, at least. We're heading toward politically locking it into a smaller amount, what that's going to mean for the future in rural Alaska. But we're going to go to a break. When we come back, give us a call, 800-478-8255 or 550-8422 in Anchorage.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
So getting back to the issue of dividends in rural Alaska, Lisa, as you look at it, we had a smaller dividend last year, smaller dividend the year before. The governor's proposing $1,200, I believe, for next year, 2018. In rural Alaska, is that something that people are upset about, feel they have to change, they can change, they want to keep trying to change, or are they resigned to it?
I think if it's, I don't know if there's a certain amount that's like they need this amount. I think for most people, probably the more the better. It's certainly money that's relied on. If it went away entirely for a large number of people, it would be devastating, because it does pay for, like I mentioned, these basics. There's other programs as well that maybe not everyone in urban Alaska knows about, but power cost equalization that really I received the benefit of it when I lived there. My electric bill was about $50 a month.
After the subsidy.
So that was not income based. Everyone gets that, because the idea is we don't have all the benefits of the development that urban Alaska has that government often helped pay for. And so that's a way to make life a little more affordable in a place where it's very expensive.
Okay, we have Roger on the line from White Mountain. Roger, you want to talk about budget cuts?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call, and Happy New Year. 2015, 16, 17, with the budget cuts in those years, how much did our statewide economy shrink, and how many people packed up and left either to the lower 48 or back to rural Alaska? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Well, I know we have had out-migration the last two or three years, more people leaving than coming in, and we've had job loss. Michael, do you have anything?
No, I do know that we have had losses to people moving to the States, and that in some measure also reflects the recovery that's gone on in other places after the 2008 economic
better prospects somewhere else
mess that we got ourselves into. As for rural Alaska, my information is only anecdotal. Maybe Lisa knows more than that.
Well, I'm just looking at some figures here, but what we do know is that Alaska's unemployment rate is the highest in the nation and has been for a while. I believe it's 7.2%, I think, at the latest. I don't have a precise number, but thousands of jobs have been lost. And that's another part of the governor's budget, was to put a payroll tax on that would be a temporary payroll tax to fund what they call deferred maintenance, but it's basically like school buildings and roofs for public buildings and things like that. So the idea is that would put people to work, because it would be construction jobs and some of them would be local jobs. I don't know that people are moving back to rural Alaska so much. I'm not sure about that. That's an interesting idea, though, that if the urban economy has tanked, people are going back to their homes. And I think that'd be something interesting to follow up on as a reporter. I'd be curious.
Yeah, I've not heard that before.
Yeah.
This is Talk of Alaska. If you're from Anchorage, give us a call, 550-8422. Statewide, it's 1-800-478-8255, or email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Michael, moving away from, well, not quite moving away from the economy, looking at the economy and the effect on business, certainly the state's largest newspaper
right.
was in danger of going out of business, in danger of closing this year. The dominant voice in Alaska journalism for a few decades. Do you think the new owners are going to change the future of Alaska journalism? How big of a story was this?
Well, this was, if you're in journalism, this was the biggest story of the year, I think. There were so many different elements to it. There were rumors early in the summer and they turned out to be factual in many respects, that the Alaska Dispatch leadership under Alice Rogoff was unable to pay its bills. There were rumors that there was going to be a bankruptcy declaration, and then there was a bankruptcy declaration in which eventually the Binkley family of Fairbanks purchased the paper. I attended quite a bit of the bankruptcy hearing and bankruptcy court, and it was a sad, sad affair. It was sad in part because there were some creditors there who were not going to get paid and probably never are going to get paid. it was a sad affair because Alice Rogoff had to appear and answer a whole bunch of questions and with her lawyer. She didn't have a contingent of people there who were friends, allies, supporters, and neighbors. It's like it's going to court just about all by yourself to, in essence, answer, how did you make this great big mess that has affected this community and affected these many people who are here in the form of creditors? A very sad event. The Binkley family has moved forward, and they're, from the beginning they've said, and I've been in the room when they've said it, versions of there are two ways to go if we're going to continue this enterprise. One is to generate more revenue, and the other is to cut expenses, and they've been trying to do both. And obviously a person of my background and experience on a day-to-day basis is going to have a biased view, but I think the paper looks pretty good on a day-to-day basis.
Right. It's great
although
to have it still
there
here.
There's always somebody who's smarter than I am in the out there writing letters to the editor, and the person said, I don't know why you changed the name to Anchorage Daily News. Shouldn't it be the Anchorage 6 days a week news?
Well, remember, Fairbanks was 6 days a week for a long time. Lisa, I will say it's great that you're still that you're at the Anchorage Daily News. I'm not sure you want to add anything to this, given your position there.
I feel okay adding a couple things. One is, yeah, we're very thankful to be alive and still, I hope, a vibrant force for journalism in Alaska, telling the stories of Alaskans. Our future is not assured. These are hard times for all kinds of media outlets, and we are really in a fight for our lives. And it's brought home every single day in the newsroom. There's these monitors, and the monitors tell you how many people are reading any particular story at that moment. So you know, are there 10 people reading my story? Are there 500? Is it going up? Is it down? You know how long people read each story. You know when they click off. All these things are being measured all day, every day, and we get reports about it. So it's really made us hyper aware. And this is just our online readership. Print readership maybe come in with a different sensibility. But for online, we know a lot about how they're reading us. And it really makes us think about what stories resonate, how to tell those stories, and keep and hold readers.
Before we take a call, I guess I've got to ask. So let's say you're a reporter at the Anchorage Daily News. You thought a great job on something, good writing, good reporting. You look at the board, you see the numbers, and people aren't reading it much. Got to be a little demoralizing?
A little bit. Sometimes, and we also, reporters now, we often write our own headlines. We used to be able to blame that on editors.
Michael and I, we've all done that.
Yeah. Well, I just add something here, and that is following up on what Lisa said, that I know that I write columns frequently that are opinion columns. Some of them are literary columns, and there's the readership for that is, you know, usually people who are older, and it tends to be not so much broad but deeper. There are people who really want to read that, but there may not be as many of them as other people. And I know on a day-to-day basis, if I'm competing with a front-page story that says child age 8 abducted, I'm going to lose every time. People want to know that and want to read it and want to hear what's going on.
Yeah, but I always turn to your column, Mike. Lisa, did you want to finish something there and we'll take a call?
I would just say about headlines, sometimes we test different headlines, and a headline will make a difference, a well-written headline. And there's this whole idea of clickbait, if you have something really sexy and people will click on it. Well, you want a good headline, but you don't want it to be something that's not supported by the facts in the story. And so the goal is to write a provocative headline or an interesting one that makes you curious about something, but the story needs to live up to it. If the headline is really out great and the story is like not so great, then you've kind of fooled the reader, and they're not going to like that. So we need to make it true, but a good headline can make a difference.
And bigger newspapers have had problems with this, especially with breaking stories. I've noticed from time to time in the Washington Post, they have stories that the text does not support the headline. It was all done in a big hurry to get it out there. And, of course, we don't know who was on the desk that day, at what time of the day. But good newspapers don't want to be doing that.
Before we go to Patricia and Homer, who wants to talk about the climate change, I will say that part where the headline has to be backed up by the facts. I think our president missed that class lesson. But anyway, Patricia, Homer, you'd like to say something about the climate.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I'm in Homer, and we have very little snow. And I'm actually on my way to Soldotna right now, and there's very little snow. My concern is, one, disaster preparedness. I've lived through a few fires here, and I foresee a pretty bad fire season if we do not get more precipitation. Just another comment I have is that I believe in the tax bill, there was the elimination or the reduction in the amount of funding for communities who experience disaster. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay, thank you. And Carol from Big Lake, an issue about income tax. Nope. Are you still there, Carol? Okay,
Larry, I think we need to go back for one thing here in particular, and that is somehow we haven't managed to get in, I guess by now it's the infamous Senate Bill 91, right?
Oh, state Senate Bill.
Yeah,
right.
We should have some kind of discussion of the,
crime
reform bill, which took on a life of its own and I'm sure became much, much bigger than Senator Coghill and the other advocates thought it would ever be.
Well, and that crime bill became the only accomplishment of the multiple special sessions we had in 2017. I think there were four special sessions. So, Michael, you want to give the background
on it? This was a national movement for reform. It's embraced by both liberals and Democrats. The Koch brothers and others who were out on the right have been involved in this. There's some discussion as to is really going to have more generous sentencing to help people get back and started in life? Or are we going to, we need to reduce the cost of prison? The measure has done both. But the general response was from the public and politicians who went to community council meetings, legislative meetings, were you're letting crooks off and getting them out of jail early. You're coddling these people and they're stealing my car. They're stealing my mail. And they're committing a variety of other crimes. Lock them up.
So in the special session, they scaled some of that back, Lisa?
Right, right. And what the experts who were looking at, I think from UAA's Justice Center and others, took a look at Senate Bill 91, which I think passed in 2016 regular session, and reforms of the reform came in the most recent special session. But what the experts found was that it was too soon because the effects were being phased in over time. This law was just taking effect. It was too soon to really say, was it having these significant effects in terms of more crime. But some things that it did, for instance, were for low-level felonies, it eliminated any possibility of prison time for vehicle theft, for instance. So, and our prison population is, this was one figure I was able to get just this morning from Department of Corrections. So our current prison population is 4,260. That's down by only a few from a year ago, maybe about 50. I'm doing the quick math, but about 50 people from fewer inmates in our prison system than a year ago. So there hasn't been a big effect in that prison population so far.
Okay.
I just wanted to add one thing on crime. The crime statistics are really interesting. And I was reading the other day, to my surprise, there are a number of thousands of murders in the United States every year that are not solved.
Surprised that so many don't get solved?
Yeah, and there are very good reasons for it, and it's usually not bad policing. It's the kind of evidence that's left. Bodies are found much later than in multiple killings in different places. There are all kinds of reasons and explanations, but you know, it's a sort of popular wisdom that a murder is a crime that is solved because you have the body. That's not true.
It's solved on TV all the time within an hour. Before we get to Jeff, who's going to talk about employee retirement, let me remind people the call-in number is 1-800-478-8255. From Anchorage, it's 550-8422, or email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Jeff?
Yes, I wanted to address the state employee retirement fund. It was $2 billion in debt before we jumped up to $5 billion in debt. And they write these huge retirement packages for state employees, and I don't remember ever voting on that or if there was a Senate bill to give them that much retirement money. I don't have anything against people that are getting it now. It was a contract they agreed with when they went to work. But in the future, if we could write the contract a little bit differently and cut these huge retirement funds down, that would help a lot balancing the budget, and I don't hear anyone ever talk about that.
Well, Jeff...
I don't think it took a... Pardon?
Yeah, about... Well, actually, it was more than 10 years ago. I think it was about 12 years ago. The legislature changed retirement benefits for all new public employees. Up until that point, if you were a public employee being the municipality, state, school districts, you would get a retirement check based on your past earnings and the number of years you served. After that legislation... That was abolished for all new employees. From that point forward, if you were a new employee, you would get the equivalent of a savings account, a 401k, an IRA, where how much you get at retirement is determined by how much you put in, and then there's a government match. So as the older employees, the past employees, leave the system, the plan was, or the expectation was, that those costs would begin to drop for government. So that has... Some people would say that's been dealt with by changing the rules.
Yeah. They've been changed that way already. Okay.
Yeah, they have. But
right,
thank you for
that.
Although the cost of medical care is still very expensive.
Right. Medical care is a big driver, but those rules also changed. Well, thank you, Jeff. Michael, maybe one other quick thought you'd like to add before we go to...
I'm struck by... how difficult it is to be in the prediction business when it comes to story of the year. At the beginning of last year, of this year, of 2017, I don't know who would have said that sexual harassment was going to be the biggest story of the year, and it would rumple the entire country at virtually every level. I mean, there was some discussion at that point about bad behavior in Washington, but not at this level, and that Harvey Weinstein would get on the cover of magazines not for being a movie mogul, but for being a sex offender.
Right. Most people probably didn't even know who Harvey Weinstein was.
Well, that's exactly right. And next year we may have the tax reform maybe on the front page again, but there are some people who think it's going to be as a result of the way the deductions have been changed and the decline in possible giving to the United Way and to the Salvation Army and other big institutions, all of whom unsuccessfully lobbied the Congress of the United States not to change the deduction law, and Congress changed it anyway.
I'm not sure who Congress was listening to. When we come back, we're going to have Caroline from Anchorage talking about Norway.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back. Talk of Alaska. It's 550-8422 in Anchorage, 1-800-478-8255 statewide. Caroline from Anchorage, you'd like to talk about Norway's savings account.
Yes, that plus, let me say first up that I worked in the oil patch for 15 years between the taps and working for Standard Oil until BP bought them out. The whole thing about Alaskan, we're tough and we take care of ourselves until something happens, and then such as in reinstituting income tax. And I'm sure Mike will remember Republican Senator John Butrovich from Fairbanks and Democratic Senator, his good friend, Zig Ziglar out of Ketchikan, begged the people to not vote to eliminate the income tax. We did anyway, and the loss of the $300 million, which was cited 2 years later in the Daily News, of money that had been earned by oil patch workers on the slope, and they would pay tax on that in their home states, but we lost about $300 million bucks. But anyway, back to Norway. They developed 14 years, starting 14 years after we did, and they looked and saw how we were doing it and decided to go a different way, which was they were the owner state, as were we, and they now are sitting on a $1 trillion fund, the so-called legacy fund, and they treated oil patch oil companies, the biggest down to the smallest, as contractors, and they didn't give away their oil. So whatever oil we get, are we going to do that again, or are we going to be smart enough to hire the Norwegians to help us hold on to the money that is Alaskans?
Well,
Hickel.
Yeah, Carolyn, the big difference between Norway's savings account and Alaska's savings account is Alaska spent the corporate income tax, spent the production tax, spent the property tax, and saved 25% of the royalty. Norway, when it set up its sovereign wealth fund, saved 100% of all oil and gas revenues, unlike Alaska, which eliminated the income tax, as you pointed out, and eliminated something we had back then called the gross receipts tax on business. Norway did not change its taxes. It put all of the oil and gas money away for savings and continued its income tax at up to 50%, continued its value-added tax, which is like a sales tax, at up to 25%. So Norway lived off itself and saved the oil money. And yes, they're sitting on $1 trillion. So they were willing to pay for the services they were getting. So I appreciate that point. Lisa, let me move away from oil and gas and taxes to a different topic. You and I talked about this before, tribal banishments in rural communities.
Yeah, they've gone on for probably forever, but we're hearing about them more. And tribal governments, tribal courts, different mechanisms have banished some number of individuals over the past few years that I had learned about, all different villages around Togiak, Quinnahawk, Akiak. There's been a number of banishments, and usually it's over people accused, but through no normal formal proceeding that we would have in a regular state or city court. But they've been accused through a tribal system of usually something involving drugs or alcohol, and are then kicked out. And it gets pretty tense. They've duct taped a man. They'll pay for your plane ticket, apparently, or put you on a boat to someplace else. But you're just told you're not welcome here anymore. The state hasn't really gotten involved.
I was going to ask, is there any question as to the legality of that?
Some raise questions as to the legality, especially if they're banishing a non-tribal member. There's trespass laws that state troopers can help enforce, but this is not going through that system. And you can't really trespass someone out of an entire community because there's going to be parts that aren't necessarily tribal owned. I mean, at least the airstrip. Some places there's not a lot of parts that aren't tribal owned, but most of it's someone else owns it. So what troopers have said is you can't really make a trespass case against someone to exclude them from an entire community. Yet the state really hasn't stepped in to say people's rights are being violated, which some people would contend that rights are being violated when people are kicked out of their communities for sometimes serious allegations.
Michael, and this has nothing to do with banishment, but I'll ask you about Congressman Don Young.
My old buddy.
Right, as we lost a congressman in Washington due to allegations of sexual behavior, Don Young became the senior member of the U.S. House of Representatives.
That is absolutely true, and he is headed, he's I believe he's filed for re-election. I know he certainly intends to run again. And there's every reason to believe he has a very good chance to become the longest-serving Republican congressman in the history of the United States. I thought it was interesting that when Trump celebrated the tax bill, he had members of our delegation there, and right behind him was Don Young wearing sunglasses. And it took me a little while to figure it out. It's probable that Don was there as a result of him being the senior member of the House of Representatives.
Does Don Young's stature as the senior member mean anything to Alaska other than he'll be at more photo shoots with the president?
Well, it undoubtedly will get him a hearing in a way that being of lesser longevity wouldn't, but the Congress now has to some degree changed itself, whether it's reformed itself, is open to discussion. And you just don't, there was a time this would have made you one of the two or three most influential members of the Congress. That's not true now.
Back when seniority meant everything.
John Conyers was very specific in what he did, that John's predecessor is the most long-serving, and he was on the Judiciary Committee in civil rights legislation.
Okay, we've got about a minute and a half left. Jeanette from Palmer, you wanted to talk about the Affordable Care Act in the tax bill.
Yeah, I followed that back from 2007 before it became the Affordable Care Act and when it basically got labeled Obamacare. And one of the drivers originally for coming up with this mandated, single participation in the insurance policy was because group policies were not being offered to a lot of employees. So if you worked for a big corporation or you worked for a big company, you could get in and get in a group insurance company. And I had benefited at one point because I had basically a portable policy that I could take with me, and it was a very good one. And then I had to give it up when I went to work for a company that basically mandated that I would participate in their group insurance. And I went from paying a reasonable fare to where they were paying three times that amount. So one of the consequences, I believe, from this tax bill that's come out is that, and I think it's going to really impact Alaskans, not just for those lower income people, but a lot of people, this is a very volatile industry, and a lot of people don't have the ability to work for the state or work for a college or a university, and they go from job to job to job. And if they're not offering these group insurance policies, a lot of people will be in that group that's not going to have coverage for insurance.
Okay, so Jeanette, I appreciate the call. We're going to have to end it. We're running out of time on Talk of Alaska, but thanks for the call and for everyone who called in. Next week, we'll be talking about what's coming up in next year's legislative session.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.